Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a couple follow-up things, just to make sure. A couple weeks ago, I had an apology item about some, imagine this, rowdy rugby players, not rowdy, not rowdy roddy rugby players, rowdy rugby players. And I misread the piece just because I made the synaptic association that rowdy rugby players would naturally be from Australia. Unfortunately for me and for Australia, these were rowdy rugby players from Austria. You see how that happened. So I'm sorry either to the Austrians or to the Australians, whoever took offense. Speaking of taking offense, a week ago, Barack Obama apologized, as was reported on this broadcast, to a TV news reporter for having refused to answer her question and saying to her, "I'll get to you in a moment, sweetie." And she chose to took offense, and I say chose. She took offense at the "sweetie" part of that sentence, although there are some who believe that she was really offended that he didn't answer her question. But I was this week for part of the time in New Orleans, Louisiana, which is, I would suspect, the one metropolis in this country where the major local talk, AM talk station, spent an actual hour on the topic of, are you offended by people calling you sweetie, baby, darling, and do you do it? Because, of course, I say of course if you know anything about New Orleans, or the South for that matter, that's what people do. Now, Barack Obama is not Southern, but that habit does have a way of, did have a way of going from the larger Southern culture into the Black American culture. And it's totally, I think the crucial point here, it's totally non-gender related. Women call men baby and sweetie. Men call women baby and sweetie. And it's just the way it is, you know? It's just different when you go into a bank and somebody says, "How you doing, sweetie?" You maybe aren't as angry at the fact that they won't let you use your ATM card in their machine or something, whatever made you go in there. So the vast majority, needless to say, of the people who called in said, "I wouldn't be offended by that. I call people baby and sweetie and darling all the time." So word to the TV news reporter, get your question answered next time and stop bitching. And speaking of news, everything you read in the Hollywood trades is accurate except the numbers and the dates. Hello, welcome to the show.
Your back.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Hey, what's happening with the great arms proliferators of our time, nuclear arms proliferators? Well, of course, we're still threatening Iran. We, the United States. Where Iran got some of its nuclear know-how? Well, that's AQ Khan of Pakistan. As you know, he's been under house arrest. Here's the good news. The new Pakistani government is allowing Dr. Khan to meet his ailing brother, to leave the house. He's likely to leave for the capital, Karachi, in a day or two. He's also been allowed to meet his close relatives and friends in Karachi, according to his source, who spoke to the Pakistani newspaper The Nation. Dr. Khan had requested the government to allow him to meet his brother. The government has also decided to keep secret Khan's departure time and meeting place with his brother, just in case, you know, people want to throw flowers at him. The government has already relaxed restrictions on Dr. Khan, and one of the new leaders of the country, Nawaz Sharif, quote, played a great role in getting restrictions relaxed for Dr. Khan. So thanks, Mr. Sharif, for cracking down on nuclear in your own country. And now, ladies and gentlemen, F is for FEMA. Just in case you're grading on a curve. According to today's Washington Post, within days of the Katrina arrival, frantic officials at FEMA ordered nearly $2.7 billion worth of trailers and mobile homes, but just 25 lines spelled out FEMA's requirements with little mention of the safety of those to be housed. Industry government experts depict the rushed procurement and construction as key failures that may have triggered a public health catastrophe among the more than 300,000 people, many of them children, who lived in FEMA trailers. Weak government contracting, sloppy private construction, a surge of low-quality wood imports from China, and inconsistent regulation all contributed to the crisis, according to the Washington Post Review. But each of the key players pointed fingers at the others, a chain of blame with a cost that will not be known for years. 17,000 plaintiffs who lived in FEMA units have alleged damaging health consequences, from respiratory problems to dozens of deaths and cancer cases in a federal class action lawsuit naming 64 trailer makers and the federal government. I still can't believe we bought $1 billion worth of product with a 25-line spec. There's not much you can do in 25 lines to protect life safety, said Joseph Hagerman, a Federation of American Scientists expert, who's leading an effort funded by Homeland Security to develop new emergency housing. There are over 20,000 parts in those homes. FEMA, for its part, faults manufacturers of the trailers. Some trailer makers use cheaper substandard wood products in the rush to meet production targets, increasing emissions of formaldehyde. Of course, why was there a rush? Katrina had been hanging around for days and days. Companies say federal guidelines were inconsistent. We're taking all the darn heat, says the new head of FEMA, David Paulson. You would think that I ordered them with extra formaldehyde so they didn't rot or something. The manufacturer's been skating by on this thing. This is bigger than FEMA. This is bigger than FEMA, he said, repeating it for emphasis. All right, it's bigger than FEMA. Let's just concentrate on FEMA then. According to the Canadian press, the Katrina recovery stretching into its third year, Katrina cottages, prefab cottages with porches, are among the alternatives being considered for emergency housing after the next natural disasters by FEMA. Since 2006, FEMA has been compiling an inventory of prefab structures, sturdy enough to withstand hurricane-force winds. Our challenge in providing disaster housing is we're required to put something out there that's good, fast, and cheap, says the director of the Joint Housing Solutions Group. Federal and state emergency management officials say their first choice is to house displaced residents in rental properties close to their communities. Well, then it would lead to the question, why, after 3 years, has there been no federal program to rebuild rental properties in the areas devastated by the disaster? Because there weren't any left available. If those units aren't available or run out, that's when trailers or mobile homes have been used. FEMA, this is now a few days before the start of the new hurricane season, and as of now, FEMA has not decided which housing alternative it will try in the wake of the next disaster. So, as the hurricane season begins, trailers like those used after Katrina are available in Florida. Don't inhale in Florida. Also, FEMA has other new preparations in store. They will no longer provide ice. It's not a life-saving commodity for most people, said FEMA Administrator David Pollison at a hurricane conference in Orlando last month. For those that it is, we will provide it. We're not going to be handing out bags of ice on the street. Of course, most hurricanes happen during the hottest time of the year. Homeless people, hot weather. No, you don't need ice. Hospitals, nursing homes, and special needs shelters will still be served, but the able-bodied are on their own. Looking back during the Katrina response, FEMA paid $12.5 million to store unused ice. And here's the buried lead, ladies and gentlemen. Another $3.4 million to melt it. FEMA paid $3 million to melt ice. I'm sure they explored all the available technologies. And, well, also on the FEMA watch, there's a town in western Kentucky, Hawesville. It's protected by a flood wall, and yet the homeowners may need to get flood insurance anyway. The mayor has been ordered by FEMA to have the flood wall inspected and certified. The city has enough money to cover the cost in its budget, but according to FEMA, only federal funds can be used for the inspection. If the inspection isn't completed, residents will have to pay for flood insurance. And the federal government says it doesn't have the money to pay for the inspection. Nice people doing nice things. Second thoughts are arising on the totally different subject, ladies and gentlemen. Where do we store our nuclear waste? Because it is so clean, safe, cheap, and plentiful. Nuclear power. The only thing you have to do is figure out what to do with the crap. So the lawmaker most responsible for turning Yucca Mountain into the proposed permanent waste dump for the nation said this week the project should never have been billed as a permanent waste dump. Former Senator J. Bennett Johnson of Louisiana says the waste repository might have won more public support in Nevada if it had been designed as a temporary facility rather than one now being planned to hold waste for a million years. You know, because we're good at planning for a million years. We're real good at that. The plan is, of course, hopelessly stalled in a protracted legal battle. I think it should have been designed differently, Johnson told a group of nuclear waste haulers in Washington. That's a fun convention. I knew we'd run into the kind of problems we have where you can't absolutely prove with certainty what's going to happen in 10,000 or 100,000 years. Yeah. The opportunity to bring lawsuits and spread uncertainty is about what happens years from now is too great. And that's exactly what happened. The nuclear industry is now increasingly interested in seeking alternatives to Yucca Mountain. Just weeks before, the Energy Department is expected to deliver its long-awaited application to license the site for a million years. The Nuclear Energy Institute has been quietly chatting with small rural communities to gauge their interest in hosting a temporary waste facility. Maybe communities with a lot of unemployment, you think? Neither Johnston nor the nuclear industry will admit that Yucca Mountain is dead, something that's said frequently by lawmakers from Nevada. But they would like to have a backup plan for the next few decades until Yucca Mountain opens. The latest estimates from the Energy Department say Yucca could start accepting waste by 2020. The department has so far spent $9 billion on the site. Nothing's been built. They don't even have a license to build something yet. And it's cost $9 billion because it's clean, cheap, safe, and plentiful. Yucca Mountain was originally scheduled to open. Any guesses? Hands? 1998. 10 years ago. 20 years ago, Johnston was a powerful Democratic committee chairman, led the drive for a permanent waste repository. Originally, the legislation included plans for what is called monitored retrievable storage, what some have called glorified loading docks, where waste could be monitored and retrieved if toxins began polluting the land or water, or if technological advances allowed for it to be recycled. But lawmakers from the proposed temporary site, such as Tennessee, protested, saying temporary would become permanent. Johnson now says perhaps the time has come to reconsider temporary sites, even at Yucca Mountain. Second thoughts always welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Never too late. $9 billion later to say, hey, wait a minute, million years? Who's kidding whom? And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
President Bush has apologized. No, not for that. No, of course not for that. No, he's apologized to Iraq's prime minister. No, not for that. For an American sniper shooting of a Quran. Bush's spokeswoman said the president apologized during a video conference with Prime Minister Maliki, who told the president the shooting of Islam's holy book had disappointed and angered both the Iraqi people and their leaders. Quote, he apologized for that, in the sense that he said that we take it very seriously, unquote, White House Press Secretary Dana Perino. So he didn't actually say he's sorry, apparently, according to her. Quote, we are concerned about the reaction. We wanted them to know that the president knew that this was wrong, unquote. That is the weaseliest apology ever on the Apologies of the Week. But the commander of United States troops in Baghdad also apologized to local leaders and tribal sheikhs, said he was asking for their forgiveness. Major General Jeffrey Hammond also read a letter of apology from the soldier in question, who was not identified. In the most humble manner, said General Hammond, I look you in your eyes today and say, please forgive me and my soldiers and my shoulders. The soldier in question had been disciplined and sent out of Iraq.
Sorry.
Right into Kuwait. Dateline Muskogee, Oklahoma. A federal judge this week sentenced a former casino financier to 39 months in prison for bribing Seminole officials in return for illegal gaming, we call it gambling contracts. Ivy Kwok Ong of El Paso also received 36 months of supervised release. I did, in fact, do the things I was indicted for. I apologize to the United States and to the Seminole Nation, Ong told the judge. I'll have to live with that. I'm sorry for what happened. Ong pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit tax evasion and conspiracy to pay and receive illegal gratuities. The probe began after officials received reports of prostitution and drug sales occurring outside the tribe's convenience store. That's what I call convenience. A Cisco Systems senior executive apologized this week for an inflammatory quote about a popular Chinese dissident group in an internal company document. A 90-page PowerPoint presentation that Cisco produced both in Chinese and English cites the Chinese government's attempt to quash the Falun Gong religious movement. Cisco's English translation of the presentation lists one goal of the Chinese Information Security Agency in this way, quote, combat Falun Gong evil religion and other hostiles. Mark Chandler of Cisco said the document was prepared by a low-level Chinese engineer for other employees. I'm very disappointed to see it, he said. And he apologized. A Bollywood starlet who made her name going beyond the call of duty in an Australian reality show has been accused of having sex with soldiers while on a tour to entertain troops in Afghanistan. Well, it's a form of entertainment. Tanya Zaeta was named in a confidential briefing paper to Australia's defense minister as having slept with special forces soldiers last month. But Australia's military admitted it broke its privacy regulations by naming the actress in the confidential note. The Defense Department apologized to Zaeta for the leak. And the defense minister said he'd ordered an inquiry into how the document, officially referred to as a hot issues brief, became public. I'll say, troubled Britney Spears, to distinguish her from the untroubled one, has reportedly apologized to friends and family for her erratic behavior. What about to the rest of us for just having to hear all about it? The singer, who was hospitalized in January, blah, 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 vowed to get her life back on track in a speech at her sister's recent baby shower. A source said, Britney was awkward and upset at first, but she took the initiative and gave a speech about how sorry she felt about her wayward behavior in recent months. She said, I'm sorry to have put you through so much. I'm strong deep down, and I think the whole thing has made me even stronger. I think now I'm on the right track to being a better mother and a better person, someone you and my boys can be proud of. She impressed guests at the baby shower, according to Showbiz Spy, with her, quote, healthy and wholesome appearance, unquote. Dishes targeted to health-conscious consumers at popular chains like Chili's, Taco Bell, and Applebee's contained as much as twice the calories and eight times the grams of fat than the restaurants claimed in their published nutrition information. According to an investigation by a group of television stations, the macaroni grill, how do you grill macaroni anyway, sample showed the widest variation from the menu's claims. Its Pollo Margo skinny chicken, supposed to have 500 calories, actually had more than 1,000, according to testing done by the television station group. Well, they actually hire a lab to do it. Television stations don't have the facilities to test the amount of fat in chicken. Only in anchor people. The chicken dinner was supposed to have 6 grams of fat. It had 49. A spokesman for the company that owns Macaroni Grill apologized for the incorrect nutritional information. On occasion, we're quoting now, by we I mean me, in restaurant preparation, portion size variances and guest customization of menu items can impact nutritional content. To the extent that any of the items were not prepared according to our exacting standards, we apologize to our valued guests. That is PR speak in caps. Yeah, portion size varies in fast food restaurants. That's because they don't pay any attention to portion control as a key to profit, you see. Senator Hillary Clinton invoked the 1968 assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy in explaining her decision to remain in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. As I think we all know by now. And when the uproar resulted, she apologized to the Kennedy family while speaking to reporters, saying she did not mean to offend anyone. Didn't apologize to anyone who might have actually been offended aside from the Kennedy family. But, you know, the Clinton campaign always allows for a great amount of off-the-cuff speaking to newspaper editorial boards where the candidate is being videotaped. Dateline Orlando, Florida, Lou Pearlman, the man who created the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, was sentenced this week to 25 years in federal prison for engineering a decades-long scam that bilked thousands of investors out of millions of dollars of their life saving. It was the maximum sentence the boy band mogul could receive for swindling some $300 million from investors and banks for the last two decades. The judge, Judge Sharp, noted that many victims were, and here's a nice touch, ladies and gentlemen, Pearlman's relatives, friends, and retirees in their 70s or 80s who lost everything. That's sweet, isn't it? Quote, the sympathy factor just doesn't run very high with the court, Judge Sharp said. The judge did say he would reduce Pearlman's sentence by 1 month for every $1 million returned to investors. It wasn't clear how or if investors would ever be compensated. I want to say clearly that there's no pot of gold out there, said Pearlman's defense attorney, Fletcher Peacock. Of course, that's who I want. Mr. Peacock, please. The scam totaled an estimated $200 million from investors. Banks were milked for another $100 million. The courtroom was packed with victims. Over the past 9 months since my arrest, I've come to realize the harm that's been done, Pearlman said in a short courtroom statement. I'm truly sorry, and I apologize for what's happened. The defense attorney, Mr. Peacock, said Perlman got caught up in lawsuits, also alleged fraudulent business practices, over his otherwise successful entertainment ventures that prevented him from returning the money. Those successful entertainment ventures included the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, but there'll be more about the last item moments from now here on the show.
We lived outside the law. We struck with wild desire. We blinded all we saw.
Back on this very special Larry King Live, which is the last one we're doing before the next presidential debate, which we're having right here tomorrow night. We taped it a couple of days ago. But more about that the next time I have to promote it. In our Los Angeles studio is the great Dewey Gordon. He started his meteoric career at the top with the boy band Boys Are Us. He's become a successful solo act in many states of the union. Dewey, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Mr. King. It's always an honor. And I guess the more I come back here, the more of an honor it is.
Jesus, Dewey, even I don't kiss up to people that much. You've been doing what lately? Movies, concerts? We haven't seen a lot of you on TV.
Well, it's strange, Mr. King, because I've been part of a really fun, really groundbreaking reality series called Don't You Know Who I Am?
Oh, yeah.
It puts a bunch of us from, I guess you could say, the 90s into real-life situations right now where we have to try to get something special, you know, special treatment or help or something.
Yeah.
You know, I have a hot date at a fancy restaurant. This one actually happened to me on this show. And they don't have my reservation, you know, and it's Saturday night, and the only way I can deal with it in the rules of the show is to say to the guy, don't you know who I am? Yeah. And if it works and you get the table, let's say, then you get to stay on the show. It's on Oxygen, too, and we're doing well enough. I think we're going to migrate to the mothership next season.
The mothership being?
The main Oxygen channel.
Yeah. That's mainly a channel for what, women?
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's its positioning. But I think with this show and another one that my company's producing, Death Row Women, we're expanding their audience demographic just a little bit, but
that's not why you're here, Dewey. No. You got a new song you just released.
Yes, sir. It's a digital download available on my site, of course, boynomore.com, and it's going to be on all the digital sites real soon. It's a tribute song, Larry, because, well, when you get right down to it, sir, it's the one thing I've never really done.
Well, besides having a platinum single as a solo artist.
Well, that too. But this is something that's very personal to me. I just went to the studio this week with my producer, the amazing Monkey C, because, you know, a tragedy has occurred to a giant of this business, Mr. Lou Pearlman.
Mm-hmm. He's the guy that, what?
Well, he was only the man, Larry, who invented the boy band, you know, period, paragraph, new page. Basically, he said to all the good-looking young guys with decent voices and some dance moves, hey, I can make you bigger than Madonna. And now he's fallen on hard times. Apparently he's been involved in some dealings that I don't really understand, you know, financial stuff that artists never really get into. But Larry, none of the other ex-boy band boys have stood up and spoken up or sung up for Lou. And so, as I say, Monkey C and I just went into the studio and you know, some magic happens as it does when your heart's really into it. And, you know, hey, I can make $1 million with this or $2. I don't really care. It's just a way of saying thank you, Lou Pearlman.
Dewey, was Boys R Us one of his bands that you knew him personally?
No, sir. Our own Svengali, Mr. Bert Lipschitz, was kind of an apprentice or a mentor of Lou's. You know, he had access to all of Lou's legal forms and everything. Yeah. And, you know, some days when we'd been in the bus and Bert would come back to our section, he'd talk a little bit about his dream, which was being bought out by Lou. It never happened, which is part of Bert's sadness. But, you know, when Lou gets out of jail, Larry, I'll still be a relatively young man. And
you'd like to work with him then?
Oh, well, who can know the future? But in the meantime, I wanted to be one boy band member who didn't forget where it all started.
Okay, it's called He Brung the Noise.
He Brung the Noise.
He Brung the Noise. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a typo in the prompter. It looks like noisy.
It's not a typo, Larry. That's urban.
Yeah. Well, then call me suburban. Dewey Gordon's new song, He Brung the Noise. You're hearing it here first.
Although I wanted to, Lou, you had the golden key, the laces for the golden shoe, Lou. The boys in your attic belong to the world. Did you love them too much, or did you just have accounting problems, Lou? You brought the boys, sweet Lou. You brought the noise, yeah. Brought the boys, oh you
you bring the noise.
Whimsy and fiction too, just what you'd like to do. Lou, you had the fairy dust, and so it grew and grew. Lou, dead men have no lawyers, there's no magic in rules. I'll be in your band and solve your accounting problems. Lou, you brought the boys over.
Time for the whole thing.
I do too, Mr. King.
But they're just going to have to go to what? Your website?
My website, or, you know, maybe CNN's.
Yeah, you don't want to be on our website too crowded. The Great Dewey Gordon is much of a classic as the Corn Riot in 8 hours. We got to end early tonight to make way for this announcement from Los Angeles. Good night.
A new kind of debate for a new kind of debate season. The Larry King Democratic Debate. Featuring questions taken exclusively from Larry King's columns.
Is there any better summer fruit than the peach, Senator Obama?
Larry, I'm going to have to say the Kelsey plum.
That's the green one, right?
It is.
Senator Clinton, your answer.
The pluot, Larry. It's half plum and half apricot.
The Larry King Democratic Debate, tomorrow night on CNN. The first name in last words.
This is Le Show, ladies and gentlemen. And now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
Dramatic evidence of the breakup of the Arctic ice cap has emerged from research during an expedition by the Canadian military. Scientists traveling with troops found major new fractures during an assessment of the state of giant ice shelves in Canada's far north. The team found a network of cracks that stretched for more than 10 miles on the area's largest shelf. The fate of the vast ice blocks is seen as a key indicator of climate change. One of the expedition scientists, Derek Mueller, said, "I was astonished to see these new cracks. It means the ice shelf is disintegrating. The pieces are pinned together like a jigsaw but could float away." According to another scientist on the expedition, Dr. Luke Copeland, the new cracks fit into a pattern of change in the Arctic. Quote, "We're seeing very dramatic changes from the retreat of the glaciers to the melting of the sea ice." Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how's the climate? Climate change and some attempts to tackle it are pushing 1 in 8 species of bird toward extinction, according to the latest assessment of the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. Good luck. At a meeting in Bonn, Germany, the organization released an update of its red list of endangered birds, which names more than 1,200 species as threatened. Of those, 26 have become more threatened since last year. The conservation status of just 2 of the species has survived. As an example, the agency cites the Australian Mallee emu wren. This tiny wren is just 15 centimeters long, and males of the species have a bright blue face and throat. Severe droughts in southern Australia have combined with forest fires to ravage the areas where the bird lives. There are now just about 100 of them, constrained to a 100-square-kilometer plot of land. A single forest fire could spell goodnight for those. 8 bird species have been upgraded to critically endangered, among them the Floriana mockingbird of the Galapagos Islands. Nice work. And Australian scientist Tim Flannery has proposed a radical solution to climate change which may change the color of the sky. Your eyes are orange, like the sky, my dear. He says it may be necessary as the last barrier to climate collapse. Professor Flannery says climate change is happening so quickly mankind may need to pump sulfur into the atmosphere to survive. He's Australia's best-known expert on global warming. He's updated his climate forecast for the world, and it's much worse than he thought 3 years ago. Sulfur gas could be inserted into the Earth's atmosphere to keep out the sun's rays and slow global warming, a process called global dimming. It would change the color of the sky, Professor Flannery told Australian Associated Press, it's the last resort that we have. It's the last barrier to a climate collapse. We need to be ready to start doing it in perhaps 5 years' time if we fail to achieve what we're trying to achieve. He's the 2007 Australian of the Year, ladies and gentlemen. Think of it. In front of Kylie Minogue. He said the sulfur could be dispersed above the Earth's surface by adding it to jet fuel, assuming anybody can still afford that. He concedes there are risks. The consequences of doing that are unknown. He said new science shows the world was much more susceptible to greenhouse gas emissions than had been thought 8 years ago. Regardless of what happened to emissions in the future, there was already far too much greenhouse gas presently in the atmosphere. Cutting emissions is not enough. Mankind now has to take greenhouse gases out of the air. How do we do that? Everything's going in the wrong direction at the moment, he says. Timelines are getting shorter. The amount of pollution in the atmosphere is growing. It's extremely urgent. As well as the global dimming plan, Professor Flannery says carbon should be taken out of the air and converted into charcoal, then plowed into farmers' fields. Can we do that? Anybody in the audience know how to do that? Folks, you'll get refreshments if you just pay attention. Wealthy people should pay for poor farmers in tropical zones to plant forests, he says, possibly through a direct purchase scheme like eBay. And all coal-fired power stations which do not have clean coal technology should be closed, he says. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, what are the inspectors general up to? A Pentagon audit of $8.2 billion in American taxpayer money spent by the Army on contractors in Iraq has found, what do you think? Good accounting practices? Good cost control measures? Really? You think? It found that almost none of the payments followed federal rules. In some cases, contracts worth millions of dollars were paid for despite little or no record of what, if anything, was received. The audit also found a sometimes stunning lack of accountability in the way United States military spent some $2 billion in seized or frozen Iraqi assets, which in the early phases of the war were often doled out in stacks or pallets of cash. In one case, according to documents displayed by Pentagon auditors, at a congressional hearing, a cash payment of $320 million in Iraqi money was authorized on the basis of a single signature and the words, quote, Iraqi salary payment on an invoice. On another, $11 million of taxpayer money was paid to an American contractor on the basis of a voucher with no indication of what was delivered. We were giving or providing a payment without any basis for the payment. We don't know what we got, said the Pentagon's Deputy Inspector General for Auditing. This is the first time the Pentagon itself has acknowledged mismanagement on anything resembling this scale. And another inspector general over the Justice Department accuses the CIA of hampering an investigation by the department, the Justice Inspector General, into the FBI's involvement in the controversial interrogation and detention of terrorism-related detainees. The whole torture thing? You've heard of it, I'm sure. The key accusation that the CIA's decision to deny investigators access to interview Abu Zubaydah was unwarranted. The allegations, only briefly mentioned in a footnote in the report, highlight another example of how the FBI and CIA sometimes struggle over cooperation. Speaking of detention, torture, at the heart of a highly sensitive memo by the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel in 2001, authored by John Yoo, when Bush administration officials were keen to institute warrantless domestic surveillance, was the definition of the word exclusive. That's right, it all depends on what the word exclusive means. The FISA law, the one that set up the court, the secret court that's supposed to approve all surveillance in this country, or electronic surveillance at least, in 1978, appeared to be an impediment for using new procedures for such surveillance. It stated that the FISA provided, quote, the exclusive means by which electronic surveillance and the interception of domestic wire, oral, and electronic communications may be conducted, unquote. But the administration didn't want to follow that because it requires court approval. So John Yoo, in that memo, just released this week, this particular passage, says, quote, unless Congress made a clear statement in the act that it sought to restrict presidential authority to conduct warrantless searches in the national security area, which it has not, then the statute must be construed to avoid such a reading. In other words, he interpreted the use of the word exclusive as not meaning exclusive. John Yoo, ladies and gentlemen, now teaching at Berkeley, and former Deputy Attorney General John Yoo is facing at least one civil lawsuit and demands for his firing from Berkeley. He wrote a memo defining torture as recognized by the U.S. laws, covering only extreme acts causing pain similar in intensity to that caused by organ failure or accompanying death. But Attorney General Michael Mukasey lambasted critics of such as John Yoo, those seeking to bring lawsuits or charges against the lawyers. Quote, the rhetoric of these discussions is hostile and unforgiving, Mukasey said of those who wrote memos saying it was legal for the United States to engage in what many critics have called torture. The Attorney General would like us to be more forgiving. Here's a start.
Who is you? He just wrote and ran. Who is you? Torture memo man. Who is you? He went and banned the band. Who is you? Torture memo man. You got you some detainees. Don't know what to do. Do you read them their Miranda rights or cover them with poo? Are you doing something illegal or proper through and through? There's only one guy to call. The one to ask is you.
Thank you, the bad mother.
Who is you?
He's in that secret clan. Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He had a clever plan.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. Oh, you've got some evildoers, and they will not say boo. A little pain and torment might change their point of view. But before you waterboard them, you wonder, could they sue? One guy has got the answer, the one to ax is you.
Shut your mouth, I'm talking about God.
Who is you?
He just wrote and ran.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. Went and banned the band.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. All these laws and treaties, you want something new. This war may last forever, you need to turn the screw. He's teaching law at Berkeley, he'll drop the other shoe. Bill of Rights expired. The one who knows is you.
Who is you?
Catch him if you can.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He just banned the band.
Memo man.
Hasn't he suffered enough?
You're a very lovely woman, but I think I better turn you down this time. 'Cause you've used all of your charms on me, and I kinda miss the things I left behind. La, 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 la. misses me, is thinking of me. Oh, my friends, but you're a lovely woman. Now you ask me to forget the things that took me long to get unfine, and go away with you again and follow you in sin and drink your wine. I've made my mind up, will not wind up life in sin, but your lovely woman. And though, even though you're lovely, the world is ugly, so come back no more. For all that you have to offer is not enough to hurt my life. Oh, oh, oh. You're a very lovely woman, very lovely, yes you are. Better turn you down this time, 'cause you've used all of your charms on me, and I kinda miss the things I left behind. Who loves me is thinking of me. Oh, my friends, but you're a lovely woman.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From Media Post, HD yet to turn on viewers. I'll read it for you. Research conducted by Scripps Networks, based on set-top box data, shows that networks still have a way to go to turn viewers on to their high-definition feeds. Hey, we're in HD radio, aren't we? Yeah. While Scripps did not release specifics, the cable programmer said large number of viewers receiving HD feeds continue to watch the same program content in standard definition. Isn't that wild? The findings come as networks are increasingly plugging their HD offerings. The efforts are partly rooted in the belief that HD content is more compelling and people hooked on it will watch more TV. Well, that's a good goal. Scripps suggested that one reason many viewers with HD continue to watch a traditional feed is because cable operators bundle their HD channels high up on the dial, possibly rendering them out of sight, out of mind. Unlike cable operators, Scripps said DirecTV gives an HD and regular feed the same channel number. Said the research director for Scripps Networks, the research suggested viewers used to navigating lower channel numbers continue to do so despite the presence of high-definition programming, unquote. You think they'd do that if the low numbers were black and white and the high numbers were color? That's me talking. Of course it is, but I mean, I'm not reading that. Nielsen figures released last fall suggest the majority of people receiving HD channels are aware they get them. The figures show some 15 million U.S. homes have TVs capable of receiving HD programming. Imagine that. 15 million. Yeah, I know. That's not a lot. Let's all watch more TV anyway. What do you say? An idea that occurs to me when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, a report came out this week on the Iraq refugee situation. 4.7 million Iraqis are refugees either in their own country or in neighboring countries. 65% of those who do not wish to return to Iraq said that that's because they're under direct threat there. Well, you know, got to break a few eggs. That's this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over the NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radios, around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer, live and archived, HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it would be just like maybe half the Iraqi refugees wanting to come home. If you'd agree to be with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago desks, and to Pam Halstead. Playlist information and the email address for this broadcast always available at HarryShearer.com, where you can also get information on the new record, Songs of the Bushmen, coming out soon. You heard a sneak preview of it today. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.